Hello and welcome to the first Devil's Trident podcast, the inaugural Devil's Trident podcast. I'm Simon. I'm here with Matt and James.
Hello.
And we have just witnessed Manchester United win 4-1 against Istanbul Başakşehir. Is that how you say it?
Başakşehir.
I think Simon was close enough.
I was.
Başakşehir.
It's not easy.
It's definitely not got a T in it. So
Başakşehir, I thought it was, but
either way,
yeah,
we beat them, and it was looking good early on. It was looking really good. In fact, it was swooning levels of Manchester United at some points. But yeah. Anybody stand out for you in the first half, James?
Yeah, well, Fernandes was the man, wasn't he? He did his bits. He did Bruno Fernandes things. He was very, very on brand today with the way that he likes to carry the ball, likes to use the ball. Very flamboyant. He was part of the Tricks and Flicks club.
It definitely was a Tricks and Flicks club,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Even
Fred was on the on the old back heels, leaving it for people.
Yeah, and I like it when, I think we all like it when United sort of click that way. Everyone seemed to be in the groove, and when the sort of Tricks and Flicks are coming out, the confidence is sky high.
Yeah.
Of course, like an opposition like these, Champions League debutants, I believe, this season.
Mm.
So just, yeah, the confidence was high. They needed the win. They we'll get to that later, I guess. But yeah, in that moment, the confidence was flowing, and Bruno Fernandes always is like the, he's like the conductor of the orchestra sometimes, isn't he, really? If he's really on form, the rest of the players seem to really vibe off him. And Van der Beek in the first half, yeah, neat and tidy, but you've got to say Bruno was on top form for the time he was on the pitch. And he was I think pretty much he was the man of the match, pretty much. But yeah, he's my standout player.
Yeah, we had the, as well as the old Flicks and Tricks Club, we had the Rashford slalom run, didn't we? Which it looked like he was just going to take it from, I think it was around the halfway line, weren't it? And he just, it looked like he was going to go all the way, and then he kind of overran it in the end. But so we got the first goal with Bruno's scorcher, weren't it?
Oh, yeah. I don't think he could have put anything more of himself through that ball. Absolutely smashed it. I think he turned his whole body towards just getting it in to the top corner, and it was just incredible. Like, if he's going to score goals like that, I don't know how anyone can say anything bad about him and give any sort of negative press to him saying that he only scores penalties, because some of the goals he scored from open play have been phenomenal.
Yeah, he was definitely much more than penalties tonight, isn't he? Well,
give the penalty away.
Give it up. Yeah, we'll come to that. But yeah, although Scholes here on BT afterwards saying that, yeah, he's just hit it really hard, hasn't he? Well, he has, but is it true? And he's kind of in the mould of Paul Scholes, isn't he? In just how he influences games, and he's always looking forward, and he can hit a ball.
Yeah, I think that was typically Scholes being bashful there when they said, "Oh, it's like you that," and he went, "You just hit it hard, don't you? That's what you do. You just..." But to be fair, Scholes, he knows there's more that goes into it than that. I mean, maybe there's not. Maybe football's just that easy. Yeah. Just hit it hard.
But I've Scholes not found that.
No, well, yeah, I've tried my best as well at times. But yeah, but all that Scholesy for you, and the technique was fantastic. Like Matt alluded to, he put his whole body through it. We sort of had to, I think. His whole body had to sort of twist to take the shot on the half volley. And sometimes you miss. Sometimes you know, like Alex Telles the other day sort of had fever dreams of that kind of nature, didn't he? On that left foot, that come over a couple of times on the volley, and I'm thinking, maybe not.
Yeah, you've seen a bit of that on his YouTube highlight reels before he signed, and he's rifling him in from there, but obviously it doesn't happen every time.
I'm sure it'll come for Alex Telles, don't get me wrong, but tonight was all about Bruno, and that was a top finish.
Well, that actually neatly brings us on to the next point, actually. I mean, you didn't even know that, which is good.
It's like we're professionals at this.
It is like we're professionals. Yeah, Telles' intent is one of the things I got noted down. I think it was noticeable how much he was willing to go forward. Whenever he picked the ball up in our own third, he was driving forward and looking to ping balls and just generally go forward, whereas Luke Shaw, who I don't dislike, I think there's plenty of United fans that are not overawed with Luke Shaw, but yeah, I think it was noticeable that whereas Luke Shaw would turn back every now and again, Alec Tellez was always looking forward. There was a bit of touch of misplaced passes from him. I think he put Fred in trouble once, I think it was, and he had made a couple of errors in shot in like quick succession, but other than that, it was really noticeable how much he wants to go forward. So I thought that was a positive, considering he's not really played for us that much yet. I think was that his third game?
Third game. Well, you got to think of the game against West Brom. He didn't really impress me that much in that game because he was just doing the same thing that Luke Shaw was doing. There was a lot of backward passing. He was going forward, but it was just a lot of lack of ideas from him, and he would just kind of overlap with Rashford all the time, and it just wasn't working. I don't know if that was just because it was his probably second game back for us, or nerves, or we weren't clicking that much on Saturday. But yeah, it was his performance tonight was much better, and is the kind of thing that you can get excited about. Mm-hmm. If he's going to play like that, then yeah, I'll gladly take a couple of misplaced passes here and there over the positiveness that you have going forward, because if we can replicate that on the right as well, hopefully we might be able to find some more goals from places.
Whole different conundrum that, isn't it?
What I'd add to that is Alex Tellez, you know, is very, very bright, comes with a great reputation from the Portuguese league. I don't know how many people, like, even in this room or people that are listening to this podcast know about the Portuguese league. My knowledge is limited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm happy to admit that. But he come with a reputation, and from what we've seen in, I think it's three games, that he loves that sort of whipped cross.
Yeah,
he's quite good at doing that. And it's like a bit of new technology at the minute. Alex, tell us, how does he operate? What can he give us? Can it do this? Can it do that? And those whipped crosses and that general positivity about his game.
He was looking to go early with him as well, weren't he?
Yeah.
I think that's a problem with Luke Shaw has sometimes. When he does want to go forward, he does want to put them crosses in, it's always far too late, and it's almost like a last-ditch effort to kind of find someone. Generally, it doesn't, because he's been pushed too far to the end of the pitch, so he can't really put that cross in. But like I said with the Tellez crosses, they work because he's got a bit of time to find someone and they come in, and it's far easier to get on the end of than these little scrambled one that Luke Shaw tends to put in.
Yeah, and of course there's going to be a bit of a sort of meta debate about like Tellez versus Luke Shaw, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. We know that Luke Shaw's out with an injury at the minute, isn't he? But
6 weeks.
So okay, fine, and Tellez can slot into that left-back spot. But we saw against PSG, I know it was kind of a necessity of Solskjaer to go with the tactics that he went with and the certain players in those positions, but Tellez operated as part of the forward line almost. He was
as a wing-back with Luke Shaw in the back three. Mm-hmm.
So realistically, you can...
Which is good anyway, because Luke Shaw, if you're going to keep him there defending, then that's fine, it works.
He seems to attack more, actually, from left centre-back rather than... left wing back, which is
it worked well with Brandon Williams instead of Tellez, but I mean, poor Tellez is obviously a lot better than Brandon Williams, so it's, in theory it should work a lot better.
Yeah, so you can accommodate both, is what I'm saying. If you need to, maybe in the Premier League it might not work so well, but
against
it
a stronger opposition,
talking about top six, maybe.
And that PSG game we won and we looked very, very good. Every single player, we're not talking about that game tonight, of course, but every single player on the pitch was pretty much a 9 out of 10 or just below. And it worked great. But Alex Tellez's influence on the team, you can see it. I mean, maybe tonight he was involved in Bruno's second, of course, because of the calamitous mistake by the goalkeeper. But still, that cross was very, very good. I mean, objectively, it's a great ball. And Cavani does
Cavani
his
almost
bit.
Got to it, didn't he?
Exactly. He did his bit. He jumped. And if you don't jump, you don't confuse the goalkeeper, maybe, and he doesn't have to panic. If you just stand there and watch it,
That's a season goal scorer, that as well.
Cavani. Yeah, oh, like, God. We'll get them to him
runs
later,
that,
I guess.
That runs he's making into the box and just like putting the keeper off and putting defenders off and just being an absolute menace. It really, really helps. And it was a mistake by the keeper, but
It still brought the goal for Bruno's second.
Yeah, it still brought
it's being switched on, innit? That's what it's all about. Centre forward play.
Yeah. Also, just one last thing on the Tellez thing. There was some good interplay with him in Rashford. I think the official account showed it today. It showed a bit of a good understanding, but one thing he had tonight was he was playing with Martial on his side rather than Rashford, because Rashford was over on the right. So he's not had a consistent partner yet, has he? Which is...
No.
Goes a long way to getting a bit of an understanding, doesn't it? So,
But there's a lot of games coming quick. And quick,
yeah, the understanding that, so. Yeah, the understanding should come quickly, you'd think. Other than that, yeah, we've mentioned the goal that Telles made for Bruno's second. Cavani had an influence on. There was also the, as I've noted down here, the sexy VAR goal.
Oh,
that was sexy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Rude Hull, it would have been creaming his pants over that one, I think.
Well, it was up his street, and it was, you know,
and it was a Dutchman that set it off. Actually,
it was, of course, it? the much sort of the mystery man, if you like, Donny van de Beek. You know, came in and did bits. Again, we can maybe get onto him later on, but the forward thinking from playing in a number six role, just I mean, listen, we're talking about a goal that didn't stand, but in its execution, in its beauty, it was wonderful. I hope it makes a DVD one day of goals that were subsequently ruled out by VAR, because I'm all over it. It was so nice, though, wasn't
we'll
it?
We'll have enough of them soon.
The VAR Chronicles.
Yeah. There's thousands of them already, of course. But that was so... Well, the thing with these goals that ultimately don't count, at least it shows you they've got that kind of stuff in the locker. And when that ball came to Rashford, I thought there's only... The angle was so tight. Again, I'll remind everybody, the goal didn't stand. But let's just enjoy ourselves for a minute. Let's fantasise, right? The ball came to Rashford at that tight angle, and there was only one way he could finish it. I thought, so tight to the byline, the keeper coming and made himself big. And I thought, oh, he might get it through his legs. I don't know.
Yeah, there was no way he was going either side of him, was there?
He couldn't, unless he cut back or something like that. But in the split second, Rashford showed his... again, for a goal that didn't count, but he showed his, fine-tuning as a striker, because he just found that, what was it, like a few inches worth of, it was a ball's worth of space for it to go through, and it went in.
Yeah.
Of course, we were dashed by the fact that it didn't count, but it was a nice play. Really,
he is
nice,
much better just generally in front of goal now. He doesn't fluff as many chances anywhere near as much as he did even 2 years ago.
Mm.
But...
Is that Ollie?
You'd like to think, wouldn't you?
Well, I've got a point on that.
The positive influence that obviously Ollie had when he first came, like Rashford was incredible, weren't he, for them? A couple of months before we dropped off a bit, but even now, when you like you said, where his game's improved and his finishing's improved and his positioning and everything about Rashford is just so much better these days. And when you have a positive influence like Ollie, instead of maybe the likes of Mourinho.
Gesture into the crowd behind him.
That's it. That's what I was going to bring up, because I was going to just briefly mention that. Because obviously Jose, don't want to talk about him too much. Clearly he's flavour of the month at the minute with his Tottenham side and Harry Kane doing bits, and that's a striker who, you know, in the same England side as Rashford. But I think, no, Matt's got a really good point. I think Ollie's been a massive factor in that. If you've got a manager on the touch, everyone reacts to things differently, of course. But if you've got a manager on the touchline that is outwardly showing to the fans, Jesus, you know, what do I have to do to get the ball over the line? My strikers can't even hit a barn door. Kind of that was the...
Yeah, there was numerous things with that, though. There was the always Lukaku. Why always Lukaku? Mm. Well, now you know. There was plenty of that with him. And I don't... You'll grow to know that. Certainly me and James didn't hate Mourinho the way that a lot of United fans did, but there was stuff they did wrong and stuff that probably diminished Rashford's confidence every now and again. And Matt's right, I think Ollie is an influence there, because that disallowed goal is probably a good example of just his cool, calm head. No fans in the stadium, obviously, so that could be on his side in one way or another. Like, he could be calmer because he's feeling less pressure, but either way, he slotted it in nicely. Shame it didn't count, because it absolutely epitomised how we were playing for that first at least half an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Where we just looked like we were going to score five or six. Obviously we didn't in the end, scored four, but they were doing really well in that first half an hour. And with that Bruno goal, that takes him to 20 in the United shirt in 35 games, which is actually quicker than any midfielder for Man United ever.
Wow.
Mm, yeah, that's
impressive. Just some stat.
It is.
It's a stat that I read on Twitter, and I'm pretty sure I read it from a verified account, so I'm assuming it's correct. Well, so if it's not, I'm prepared to be taken down on that. But
sounds right, though. So
comments. Yeah, I'll go with it. Yeah, leave your comments and your disses for Simon in the comment section.
He's hit the ground running, eh? He's
at just, him.
Yeah, you wouldn't.
You can't yet, but would you be able to?
Yeah.
But yeah.
So yeah, he's just hit the ground running, eh? I can't remember anybody having such a influence on the team straight away in the way that he has for a while, long time.
Yeah, makes you think, doesn't it? Because Cantona maybe, but that's sort of deifying him a little bit into this kind of godlike status. But you didn't really ask the question, but it is a question to be posed. Like, did someone turn up at United and instantly grab it by the reins and just take control in that kind of way, just put them numbers out there? And I'm thinking maybe like
possibly Rude.
What about Rooney as well? I mean, maybe not
right away.
But he started with a hat-trick, didn't he?
Right away, he did, yeah.
From the first minute, I'm talking. But no, in terms of given a few months to actually be... I don't know, and maybe this team was crying out for somebody to sort of do that. Maybe Man United teams in the past, maybe, you came in as a new signing and we were already sort of doing the business. 08-09... other good teams around that point.
It was just strengthening the squad, weren't it?
Van Persie's one, I suppose.
Oh, there you go, yeah. That's
probably the last one that really did it
after
coming in. But he really did it all in that first season, didn't he? Essentially. Mm. So, but there's not been many, and he has certainly changed us. And it probably showed from the fact that when he went off after an hour, things kind of dipped a little bit tonight. Not too much, but enough for them to feel like they had a little bit of a chance. Not too much. I don't think anyone was too worried. Obviously, the third goal came from De Gea kind of being at fault, you could argue. Matthew, I'll let you take this one because you are the goalkeeping head.
I think first of all, what I will say is this is very... I was a bit frustrated with this because that was like a glimpse of like old De Gea behaviour from last season, because this season has been pretty much incredible. Like he's pulled us out of the shit quite a few times and he's been really, really good, and it's just reminded me of like how good De Gea can be. But this was a bit sloppy, and I think it was because he was on his far too much on his line. Work didn't really give him enough chance to get over to the ball, but it really should do, because it's going over the wall, but it's coming towards him on his right instead of going the top left. I mean, dealing with the top left, and if you'd gone the top left corner and he wouldn't have got to it, that's fair enough because he would have been stretched, but he had far more time to come across himself on the right to deal with it, and he could have caught it.
It's like it took him by surprise. And
he wasn't paying attention enough, the lack of concentration, or the wall was like hampering his vision. But if the wall is hampering his vision, then he should be rearranging his wall so it doesn't do that. It was a bit sloppy for David, and I was a bit frustrated in it, because he should have done a bit better. And I don't really want to go two-footed on him here by like blaming it all on him, because it was a well taken free kick, but it could have been dealt with slightly better.
Yeah, and he was having a decent game before that. I don't think it, like you say, I don't think it is indicative of his season, or if it's not a howler.
No,
and that was the sort of thing that he was probably guilty of in last season, especially. Just switching off. It was his concentration, weren't it? A lot of the times, just easy stuff that he should be saving down to his right, and it's just fumbling under him. And it happened way too often. Whereas tonight, he made a good strong save down to his right before that free kick, and it was like, Dave is back. And I think Dave is still back. He's benefiting from being challenged by Henderson, who we thought was going to play tonight. I think everybody thought it was a chance for Henderson to drop in, but Dave played. But
and you're right with that. the save was sort of old school De Gea sort of back, you know, and like he's sort of never had any issues. Last season, yeah, there were a few troubling issues for him, which is was uncharacteristic. But then it sort of started creeping into his game a little bit more, and then he became a tiny little bit accident prone, which was frustrating because sometimes it was very key points in the season and key points in games. But with this free kick, I mean, I just want to play devil's advocate. Devil's trident advocate. There you go.
Happy place, happy place.
But, you know, the free kick was struck well. But how many times do you see maybe a free kick struck similar to that and the keeper doesn't even move and it just goes in the corner and you go, ah, right, fair enough, right. All right, well, they hit that well, didn't he? Because obviously the objective of the free kick taker is to, you know, get it up and over the wall at pace, and the guy did that.
There was a bit of pace on it, wasn't
there? And it was struck quite well. And there was that misdirect because there was two guys stood over the ball, wasn't there? A right foot and a left foot, and the taker took it, and he deceived sort of everybody. And De Gea, sometimes he becomes a victim of his own arm span sometimes because he can reach stuff that other people can't. And so maybe, again, if he'd stood there and just watched it, yeah, he might come under sort of some criticism, but he sort of, we almost had a Roy Carroll moment, didn't we? Oh, silver line! And he threw it out again.
Not going to get away with that these days.
No, but all I'll say is, yeah, it's a shame. I mean, if we'd lost that game 1-0 to that goal, that becomes a massive talking point.
Yeah.
But now it's just something we can brush over.
Or even if it's the catalyst to us ending up getting pegged back, which
could have been the case.
Could have been the case at some point.
60 minutes
in. But De Gea had this in about 2012-13, I think it was, when we won the league, thankfully, that season. But there was a few instances where there were some shots from outside the box, if you remember. And he was getting down to them, but parrying them back sort of into the six-yard box. And then they were getting sort of put in. And he was getting criticised. Well, why is he parrying it back? But as Paul Ansorge on his various platforms has sort of defended him and said, well, the thing is, he's done well enough to reach it in the first place. A lot of keepers wouldn't be able to reach it, and it's a goal, and you wouldn't get that criticism. But no, it was worth. Luckily, it doesn't mean as much as it could have, but we conceded a goal.
Mm. Yeah, it's not like he had a quiet game though, so you'd be confused about why his concentration would dip because they had 13 shots. Seven of them off target, four on target. He saved three of them, and obviously there was the goal. So I mean, it's not necessarily a quiet night for him. And again, he pulled off some incredible saves. It's just you'd have thought he'd have done better with it. That's all.
It's a well hit free kick, though.
Yeah,
it's. But I agree with you. It should be doing better.
It wasn't the end of the world, but at some point it looked like it might be.
A clean sheet would have been great.
I think that's definitely.
Champions League clean sheet is what you want,
and it's what Ollie's hanging his hat on at the moment, and it is, and he did towards the end of last season when we had loads of clean sheets. A few of the clean sheets were against shit sides, but you know, he was hanging his hat on the clean sheets and being solid at the back and just letting the forward line of Rashford, Greenwood, Martial, Bruno just do the damage, but. So he'll be disappointed as well that we haven't kept a clean sheet, but it's, like you say, it's not the end of the world. Things changed essentially when, with like it tends to do when teams are allowed to make a raft of substitutions, we made a few changes and a little bit of the cohesiveness kind of went a little bit, I think. We brought Brandon Williams on for Wan-Bissaka, who may have an injury. We'll come back to that. Greenwood came on for Rashford, was it? Or Bruno? Well,
I think it was Rashford.
Bruno came on, didn't he? Bruno came off, sorry.
Yeah.
Greenwood came on. James came on as well for. Who did James come on for?
Martial, wasn't it?
No, Martial stayed on. Rashford came off. Bruno came off. And Aaron Wan-Bissaka came off. That was it.
Yeah.
So Dan James and Greenwood joined the attack. Brandon Williams joined in at right back, which could potentially be a new role for him, I think, considering the Telles and Shaw situation on the left. It looks like, well, obviously, Diogo Dalot's he's gone off to AC Milan. So, the theory could be, I can't see Fosu-Mensah being top choice of, as right back replacement. So is Brandon Williams now backup right back rather than backup left back?
Fingers crossed. I think for me, I think it'd be great for him to see him there.
He's right-footed. It makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I think, like, last season, there was certain times where he was amazing when we didn't have Luke Shaw, and he was putting in performances and being good going forward and being positive going forward. Sometimes some of his defending's not amazing, but sometimes you can let that go, because, like, even for, like, Trent for Liverpool, not amazing his defending duties, is it? But when you think about stuff he does going forward, you'd be stupid not to play him. So if he can still go forward and get us opportunities, put in good balls, then I'd rather take that. You can risk maybe a bit of lax defending every now and again if you've got good people behind him in the centre to back him up.
And of course, he's, you know, a little bit younger than Alexander-Arnold as well. Less experienced. And I agree, he's got that kind of flair going forward. I don't even know quite what his strengths are in terms of, I mean, he just gets forward, he just likes to be part of that. Sort of,
he works hard, he's tenacious,
yeah,
his work rate. But in terms of, like, can he cross, we're not fully still sure about all that yet. And he scored a couple of goals,
which
is great. He's got that one against Sheffield United. Has he got one? I think he came close once, and he scored one. But, you know, he just very sort of visceral, sort of, he likes to just be the epitome of, like, a scrappy sort of young guy grabbing his chance, which is great.
He's more aggressive than Wan-Bissaka and definitely an upgrade going forward.
Oh, he'd headbutt you. I think he's the most aggressive, one of the most aggressive players in the team, I think.
Yeah.
But given time, we'll see.
Like shades of Nicky Butt.
A little, I think.
He's
got that
in his car.
Yeah, he's got that same sort of Mancunian thing.
Council estate, I am not fucking about.
Yeah,
sort of,
he's a scrapper.
Sort of attitude.
Yeah,
he's a scrapper, and it's good.
We're always going to like.
yeah, of course. It's in the DNA of the club, you know, just having, like, you know, just sort of scrappers in there and stuff. But the thing is, he took his chance, and he's always heavily involved on the flanks. The thing is, with the transition to right back, this is natural. It's preferred foot, isn't it? So maybe just not having to sort of cut in might improve things for him. We'll see. I don't know how many times he's actually played right back for us, because he's tended to play.
Well, he got switched to left back in the youth setup because Ethan Laird is so high. Is obviously in the under 23s and has played for the first team a few times. Yeah. He's so highly rated that they wanted to play him right back. So, but Williams being a full back, the option was to fit him in the side at left back, so he's not necessarily naturally a left back anyway.
See, there you go. It could be a rebirth for him.
It could be.
He could just grab it with both hands, and then there
he's
you go.
He's got himself in the. He's an established member of the first team squad. There's been talk of Southampton, in fact, wanting him on loan, and Ollie's said no because he obviously has him in his plans, and that might be why. It might be a battle between Williams and Delors over the next summer to see who. Who stays on? Obviously, I think Wan-Bissaka will remain first choice, whatever happens. But it's whether Williams is happy being second fiddle. You think he would be at this age?
Oh yeah.
Not that Wan-Bissaka's particularly ancient, but
no. But when I said, like, obviously we don't know about Williams's sort of what his strengths are. I mean, we know what his strengths are from watching him, like what he's provided so far. But obviously, with him being so young, we don't know. Is he going to be one of these guys that's going to specialise in crossing? Is he going to kind of be... I mean, we know that defensively, he has his sort of weaknesses here and there. Again, young kid, so we improve on that, you'd think. But it'd be interesting to have both sides of the coin, actually, because if Wan-Bissaka going forward still isn't quite... Which surprises me, to be fair, because he was a converted winger, wasn't he? So to have no real attacking... He has that thing he likes
it's
to
like
sort
the re-
of...
the reverse Valencia's he's got.
Yeah, a little bit. So you could have kind of both elements there where Brandon Williams is just hell for leather, right, you know, wants to get involved in the attack all the time, and then Wan-Bissaka can just be like, whoa, now, easy there, I'm just going to take the ball right off you.
Yeah, we don't really know what Williams will do at right-back either, considering we've only really seen him at left-back. Yeah. He has to cut in if he's going to put a cross in normally. So it's a completely different ball game over there for a right footer.
His reputation has been built on that left wing. Left back, hasn't it? So we'll see about about this now. It's exciting. I'm down with that. I'm fine. Yep.
Anyway, moving on. The subs, yeah, like we said, had a bit of an effect. They hit the bar after they made it 3-1, and it was, ooh, is this going to be one of those days? In fact, it got Ollie off his seat in the stands.
Wow,
he stopped watching Seinfeld on his on his iPad.
I'm sure it's Sopranos.
You just think it's Sopranos because our old boss is sat in the office and watched Sopranos on his iPad. Doesn't necessarily have to be Sopranos.
It just seems like Sopranos would be the kind of thing you'd be enjoying.
He's said in his recent press conferences that he's been watching Seinfeld.
Has he?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I said it.
Oh, right, yeah. That's mint.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Good lad. I hope he just starts throwing that into some of his press conferences. Just like, what's the deal with Offside?
What's the deal with Bruno? He was sponge, really. No soup for you.
I have to ask you, James, if you've seen the Instagram account dedicated to Solskjaer times Seinfeld. I don't know if it's something to do with Paul from No Question About That, because he always shares it in his story.
Right.
And you might be the man to know because you know him, you love Seinfeld. You don't know Ollie on Solskjaer, but you
sound like him sometimes.
You could be him.
Fantastic. No, it's a good question, actually. I saw something on Twitter and there's a whole account
dedicated to it. So
that's great, actually. I will action that. Ollie
times Seinfeld, I think it is. Right. Something like that, yeah.
Because it's just the perfect match, that, isn't it? Because he just doesn't...
It's just pictures of Solskjaer with Seinfeld quotes on it.
Excellent.
That sounds amazing.
Excellent, brilliant.
It'd make more sense to me if I'd seen more Seinfeld than I have. I've seen a bit of Seinfeld, but you're definitely more the man for that.
No, I love Seinfeld, and it's just a weird mash of worlds, because you had, obviously, Jurgen Klopp was all heavy metal, and he likes his heavy metal, doesn't he, and stuff, and we've got Ollie that likes to watch Seinfeld, which
likes
is
90s
great.
90s sitcoms.
American sitcoms, yeah.
But that was one of my favourite tweets of all time. Just a few weeks ago, which was, what was it now? Guardiola stood on the touchline, didn't win. Klopp stood on the touchline, didn't win. Ollie sat watching Netflix, 3 points, because he's always there and he's cross-legged, he's got his little tablet out. And that's maybe where he's getting all his Seinfeld episodes from. So, Ollie, if you're listening, I recommend Fusilli Jerry.
Oh,
great episode where Kramer makes Jerry out of Fusilli, and then he ends up, I mean, spoiler alert, he ends up sitting on it, it goes up his backside, but...
What I want to know
is... It's a couple.
He must have it downloaded, because he can't be watching Netflix on that Wi-Fi connection at Old Trafford.
No, it's dreadful.
I don't think I've ever read a text message or anything.
No.
Yeah, but when you take away the huge amount of fans that would all be in the stands, the bandwidth might be able to handle it these days.
Could handle it, I suppose, yeah. Anyway, we weathered the storm. We eventually got a fourth, which brought it back round to looking... as comfortable as it was, really, and there was only a shaky 10 minutes. The commentary team made a bit more of it than was probably worth, but we got that last one through Greenwood and James. Greenwood, who looked good again when he came on, it's good to see him looking confident, even though he's had a load of abuse, and so has Dan James. In fact, really, he's playing well for his country, and he's not done much for us, but his confidence has possibly been low. But the pair of them worked together, scored a decent goal.
Yeah, we were very positive, actually. Although when we made the changes, our intensity dropped a bit, and we weren't as convincing as we had been in the first half and in the early bit of the second half. But you saw that as soon as Greenwood got the ball, that something might happen.
Because you always feel like that with him.
He just the positivity going forward and creating them runs, and then.
The first thing he did was knock it round a defender and run onto it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it was incredible. So if you think, if it's good, when we've got pace like that, because literally the three players we brought on were just like nippy young lads. And yeah, to be fair, it does work. Well, we know it works because it has done multiple times on the counter, and that was a perfect example of how well we can play on the counter. And that ball from Van der Beek as well to Greenwood, and then Greenwood just taking a look up and being like, well, if I fit that in the box, I know that James is going to get at the end of it, so I might as well just do it. And then James, calmly, very, very calm, very cool and collected, slots it away, which is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Greenwood came on. He was so sharp. He was razor sharp. And I think that is the Mason that we know and that we understand. I mean, and I'd be biased if I said, well, we're all on the same page here, clearly, but that's the DNA of a Man United player. You know, through the years, they've had abuse, they've had this, they've had that. And, it sounds quite militant to say it, but there is sometimes a bit of an agenda against United players for whatever reason, whatever it is, you know. But Beckham had it in the World Cup, obviously. It was a bit daft, of course. Got himself sent off. But then, you know, some of the vitriolic abuse.
The Phil Neville one as well.
Yeah, of course. But some of the abuse that follows these players over, things that happen on a field, or maybe off the field, you know, can be... it's not really...
It's not that it affect him from the looks of it, anyway.
No, of course not. He came flying.
By all accounts, it isn't. Whatever people were saying about him isn't true anyway, so...
Yeah, of course. But he was very... you get that feeling that, you know, that next goal for him is going to be massive.
Mm.
And how many times have we seen it down the years? Beckham, I think it was the 98-99 season, well, it must have been, and he's got a free kick against Leicester, I might be wrong, at Old Trafford, and the place erupted and just his teammates were all just, you know, it's sometimes, unfortunately...
They'll rally around him, won't they?
Yeah, and we always, you know, protect our own. But the thing is, basically, Greenwood, he was very, very sharp, and you could see, you know, he was desperate to make an impact on the game, and he did, and he... assisted the Dan James goal, which I said at the time, it's, you know, it's a very, it's sort of the antithesis of a Dan James goal, really, that, isn't it? Because it was composure. Yes, he found himself deep inside the box, which as a winger, doesn't always find himself there. The goals that he scored for us in the past have been great ones, really. Like, he's outside the box and he sort of has that blunt shooting technique where he hits it like a sledgehammer and it sort of flies in, maybe not as much control, but yeah, beggars can't be choosers, and the ball flies in the top corner. But this time the ball fell to him and he had a little look and then he sort of just scooped it. It was very, very very composed finishing there. And I remember saying it'd be nice for Dan James to get a goal. I'm pretty sure everyone when he walked on, you know, Dan James has his detractors, of course, but come on,
there's something there, isn't there?
We want him to kick on. I like the guy, and he came in as a, it's like a Javier Hernandez situation where he came in, he's like, I'm not playing, am I? Like, I thought I was going to be in the under-23s. Like, no, dude, you're starting. And then he sort of, maybe Javier Hernandez took to it like a duck to water, maybe, and he striker, obviously it's a different position, but I think Dan James maybe could be forgiven for assuming I'm not going to be like the guy you're playing on the right wing every week. I just come up from the Championship, but fair play to the guy, you know.
Yeah, well, he did well when he came on tonight. He ran down a couple of blind alleys, but he got his goal, and hopefully that'll give him some confidence, because, as Robbie Savage kept saying in the commentary, he does it for Wales, and by all accounts he does. Like, Ryan Giggs speaks really highly of him for a reason.
Did you see the goal he got last week?
Yeah, it's a great goal.
The goal, that, really. Yeah. You know, again, it's reminiscent of the goals he got for us in his first few weeks. Just absolutely screaming it. No thought needed, just scream it.
There's something there, but yeah, I think he needs this squad player role rather than... We were overly reliant on squad players last year anyway.
Yeah.
The likes of Pereira and James shouldn't have played anywhere near as much as they did do, but they wouldn't have done if key players weren't injured, so... Yeah, hopefully he'll benefit from little appearances like this and keep contributing in positive ways, and his confidence should go up, and it shouldn't be such a big drop when we do rotate and we see these sorts of players come into the side, and it won't be as noticeable, hopefully.
One thing I will mention, we sort of mentioned there that we had a 10 minutes where it was a little bit rocky. We got away there with like a 4-1 win, the points are in the bag, and it looks, well, 1 point is going to qualify us for the next round, which is great, and, you know, you take the positives out of it, of course, because there's plenty. But just that little bit there where, the substitutes did come on, the changes were made, and just stuff started to not really connect at times, and we did have the ball being given away quite often. It gets me annoyed sometimes. Obviously, it's a positive night for us, so I'm in good spirits. But sometimes you sit there and you think, we give the ball away a lot sometimes, and when we put our minds to it, we can be quite poor. And you want to build on that first half that we had. Obviously, was great, and then these guys come on and maybe they, you know, maintain that kind of high standard. And sometimes it slipped a little bit, you know.
Yeah,
and
it doesn't quite, especially when they're all at once as well. It's not like one player comes on, beds himself in 10 minutes, another player comes on, beds himself in. It's everyone all at once, and it's a big change to the dynamic of the team, isn't it?
Yeah, because it had a bit of an international friendly feel to it at some point. Yeah. With that, like they call it a raft of changes, yeah. Don't they? Yeah, so you can understand some sort of, like, you know, bits being disjointed here and there. But some of the passing sometimes, you do yourself favours. And Matt had a really good point, actually. I'll let him talk now. A bit about Maguire and his leadership. You sort of erupted at one point, and I sort of tended to agree with you. If you want me to remind you, I will.
Oh, right. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, I think there was some, like, really, really sloppy defending. And at one point, Maguire just turned around and was just, like, a bit exasperated. Like, what are we doing? Instead of shouting at the players around him and, like, G'ing them up and just showing a bit of leadership, instead he was just like a mourning child, being like, oh, come on, what are we doing? Like, in that situation, he needed to take control of it because you need that leadership, and he wasn't really, really doing that.
I think he was a little bit reluctant to have too much of a go because I think he'd lost his bearings of where all the rest of his teammates out, and he had to put it out because he'd lost, like, the run of himself rather than having anybody else to blame. I think that was possibly a little bit of it. But obviously, we haven't seen that back.
Yeah.
But that could possibly be it. But hopefully, you'd like to think that he would just rollick people if needed. Anyway, so a good night tonight. We've won convincingly. We'll have a little break now, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about Southampton on Sunday. Okay. Hello, it's Simon again. I'm just here to quickly tell you listeners where to find us on social media. We're The Devil's Trident on Instagram and Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at Devil's Trident. You can also keep up to date with us at thedevilstrident.com. Okay, on with the show. Okay, welcome back to the Devil's Trident podcast. We've just been talking about United's 4-1 win against Istanbul Başakşehir. I feel like that's right.
Again. Here, here.
Here, here, here. Now we're going to move on to the Premier League, where United need to improve badly and quickly. Because we're sitting 10th, actually. I think we've improved since last weekend, so that's not too bad.
Top half of the table.
Top. Woo! Mm-hmm. We are flying high, similar to last season. We've had a slow start again. Obviously, the 3 points on Saturday helped. It wasn't a great game against West Brom by any stretch of the imagination. The most important thing was the 3 points, I suppose, but it wasn't awe-inspiring, and a bit of a downturn from the Everton game. We had plenty of chances on the first half. Was the Martial chance in the first half? Does anybody remember?
Yeah.
It was a good save. Just Sam Johnstone had a worldie, as can happen with United keepers coming back to Old Trafford. The ghost of Tom Heaton. I don't know whether they feel like they have something to prove when they come back.
I was going to say the spectre of Jonathan Spector, but he's not a goalkeeper. Because that's it, West Ham beat us with him in the side, and I remember thinking, Spectre. Anyway, sorry.
perfectly valid point.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, Martial came in for a bit of flack, actually, after that game, didn't he, as not being a natural number nine. And I think we've seen that every now and again from him. I think he's quite, as they put it on BT tonight as well, they put it quite streaky, and I guess he kind of is, but he's not played as many games as everybody else this year as well. I don't know what you two think about him as a number nine.
Rooney was the same.
Yeah, Rooney had that elements of that in his career where he did, you know, he'd have dips in form and then astronomical sort of moments of greatness, and goals would follow. Martial, for me personally, I think it's a little bit worrying. because you see it, he's got, we seem to say it every single season, but he's got everything. He's got the application and the technique, some of that close control. I bet most of the players in the Premier League can only really dream of that level of. I've always said he doesn't really move the ball; he manipulates the ball. He trusts his own ability, and it's amazing. He's from that Clairefontaine school of football, which Anelka came from, and Henri and Zidane, if I'm not wrong. Highly educated footballer, highly educated feet, usually associated with you say that in wrestling.
He kind of always. I don't know if it's the same for you, but I kind of always feel that you want him to do this kind of ornery thing of being a bit of a wide man, and then just a switch goes and he becomes this great prolific striker down the middle. He's got similar traits, and that he's fast, he's got great feet.
Yeah.
He's a great finisher. He's still early in his career, we have to remember that.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know what your take on him is, Matt, but I think he should have finished that one on Saturday. As much as a great save it was,
It's just for me. I think some of his positioning isn't great. I think that's what lets him down sometimes. And you look at him playing, you think, is he going to turn up today? And he started very brightly against West Brom. You're thinking, oh, right, well, he means business here. Like, as long as he's making these runs and he's doing what you're saying, he's coming in from the wing.
He started so brightly, I missed it. I didn't even see that chance.
But, yeah, if you're thinking he's going to be like that, then you think, oh, we might be in something special today. Because them games, when he's like that, it's just so impressive, and you can't knock him for anything that he does. And it's so frustrating to see him come back this season off his best season for United last season and just not really do anything. Is the arrival of Cavani rocked him a bit?
That sort of thing has rocked him before, in that his nose bent out of shape a little bit with that on arriving, didn't he?
But if that's the case, then why is he not proving everyone wrong by going, well, fair enough, this is what Cavani can offer you, but this is what I can offer. And at the moment, it's not really doing enough to really make you think that you wouldn't want to start Cavani, because, again, Cavani's just is an impressive.
I don't think Martial's been too bad, though, but there is constantly that argument that he's not a number nine. Like, I put it out there on the social media pages about Calvert-Lewin, how he's adapted and took advice on board from, obviously, Ancelotti and Duncan Ferguson, where he was used to be not the same way as Martial, but chasing down balls and maybe not getting into the positions that he should be doing. And Ancelotti wanted to mould him into, similar to Inzaghi, of just getting into the box, scoring these little scruffy goals, and that's what he's scoring. And he's on 10 already for the season, I think, in Premier League. And that's a lot of the criticism I saw for Martial in the West Brom game was that he wasn't in the box. Balls came into the box and there was no one there, including Martial. That's one thing he's not picking up from Solskjaer, because Solskjaer wants him to score them goals. He's been very open about it. He said, I want him to be scoring goals in between the posts. Scrappy goals. Him and Rashford can score all the world as they like, but they need to add that to it.
Yeah.
So he's obviously disappointed with him in that sense. He's still not quite doing that.
Yeah, I think Martial, I was going to sort of reference Pretty Woman there, but I don't know where I was going with it. Basically, Martial's a high-class
prostitute.
I wasn't going to say that, you said that, you know. But Martial is so elegant, though, right? I don't think...
He's only Richard Gere, then.
Someone's Richard Gere in this analogy. It might be me. Jesus, I don't know. But Martial does the beautiful things. Like, he's not necessarily going to be a freak in the bed. He's a lady on the street, though. And... No, the thing
really
is...
He really is. He can rock a, no, because he can rock that, a pair of heels.
People are getting these analogies and they're making sense.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. Calvert-Lewin is doing the scruffy bits. Yeah. And he's getting the goals to
scoring more scruffy goals than good goals as well.
Yeah, and ultimately, they all count. Calvert-Lewin's I think it comes down, and I don't want to sort of just kind of put Martial down to certain little bits, but the thing is, he's so elegant in his play, and he likes to run at people, and he likes to... I think he likes nothing more than to dribble with the ball. He loves that, doesn't he? And he can bamboozle people. Sometimes in friendly games, when obviously the pressure isn't quite up there. I mean, that one, we watched it. I was sat exactly here. We watched 2017 or 18.
The Real Madrid one.
And he sent about five players.
Everybody was like, it's pre-season, but it was still...
It was unbelievable.
I think it was an assist in the end, but it actually came something. It was an assist for Lingard,
of all people. But yeah, against Madrid. But he just loves running with the ball. That's kind of his nature. And the scruffy goals, Martial's got a couple of scruffy goals in his career. There's probably five or whatever you want to call it, where he's just kind of, by hook or by crook, he's got himself on the end of something.
That's how he started last season. Everybody was like...
Yeah.
Oh,
against Chelsea, yeah,
has it clicked already? Sort of thing.
Yeah, but then again, you're asking, you know, you're screaming at a cat for not being a dog. There, in many ways, it's the thing is, Ruud van Nistelrooy was the king of the sort of I am just going to shrug you out the way and, you know, toe poke that in.
But he seems set on being a number nine as well. He seems to. Well, reportedly, has the belief that he should be the number nine. He should be playing down the middle, when his own strength is wide player. Arguably, it's a bit of a strange one, but
he's so damn technical, and some of these strikers like Calvert-Lewin and stuff. I'm sure he's got stuff like that in his locker. But when you watch Martial in full flow, maybe not necessarily down the wing, but just running. I mean, that one against Fulham, back end of the 2019 season, his first few months. Ball got played into him.
That is Martial, isn't it?
That's Martial. That is him to a T. But those kind of ones where, like, he's not Chicharito. But then again, Chicharito is not Martial.
Yeah.
So these two things, you know, one of these is not like the others. But Matt, what do you think? Because Calvert-Lewin he's clearly been instructed by his manager to just have the desire to just jump in and score the ugly sort of goals. But he scores nice goals, actually, Calvert-Lewin, to be fair.
Yeah, he's a good player. Yeah.
But he's not screaming it from 40 yards. He's not taking four players on and burying them.
Well, you can see that this is where the argument isn't it? Because obviously we've seen Rashford improve, we've seen Martial improve to a degree, but he's still not fulfilling the stuff that Ollie wants him to do, as we've discussed. So there's only so long that you can kind of keep going on with that, and there must be something that doesn't necessarily right with him, because obviously Mourinho struggled with him as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just there's I don't want to say that Martial is a problem, because that's not the case, because sometimes the way we set out in a game probably doesn't help him. So probably certain players he doesn't connect with them certain times, and sometimes if he's playing on a wing and he wants to be in the middle, he might drift over and he might not find himself in the right position sometimes. But it seems like Rashford has adapted quite well, and Tony doesn't seem to want to.
Well, they both battled over that left spot, didn't they?
Mm.
And Martial wanted to be down the centre, so it kind of fell into place. And Rashford's made that left spot his own, really. But now Martial's could potentially be shunted back out there, and Rashford could be on the right, which could solve some issues, because I think Rashford had a good game on the right tonight. Yeah. So possibly that could be the answer. Rashford did have a good chance on Saturday night, though, again, with Sam Johnston saved it. Mm.
Stunning save, if I'm thinking of the right one.
Yeah, I think you are. With the side-footed one where he took a touch, kind of dummied it, I think,
Hand out there.
Is that where a limb came out of nowhere? Brilliant save. Yeah.
Very impressive.
Maybe he should score, but...
Yeah, I think he should score. And I think if he does score, I don't think we're getting as much flack for... poor performance. I think 2-0's a bit more comfortable, isn't it? But turned out it was just the one goal. It was the Bruno's penalty they had to retake, rightfully. He did come off his line. He came off his line both times, in fact. But Sam Johnston doesn't seem to think that should be allowed.
What, that he shouldn't, that he's about being off the line?
Yeah, no, he
about having the
Yeah, sorry, he doesn't think it should be retaken because he should be able to come off his line.
Oh, right. Well, for me, right, keepers are going to have to get with the program with this. Everyone else has to get the program with everything else, VAR wise, and new handball rules and all this kind of stuff. Why are keepers not being able to adapt? Surely you should be training for that. You should be preparing for the fact that you should be keeping at least one foot on the line now.
It's been the case for, well, it was the case last season at least, weren't it, I think.
But so yeah, there's been enough time for people to get behind this. So
I think it's years of training where the taught to spring forward to adjust the body, I guess, to shift the body weight one way or the other. Like it's a jump forward and then a spring either way, isn't it?
Yeah, but I get that, but also there's also a lot of time for you to change and adapt. Mm. Like that's the whole thing about modern football, is it's forever changing and there's so much stuff going on and there's different rules coming in and different ways of doing things. And like, so why not just adapt? Mm. Instead of digging your heels in and being pissing them on about it, just change the way you train, change the way you do things, and then eventually
you might get the better of Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might get the better of that. And that's another thing that annoys me, the fact that the people are saying that they shouldn't be, the taker shouldn't be able to do these little hop, skip and jump things before the take penalties. Like, again, why?
Well, the penalty takers are becoming kind of more creative, aren't they, with the little run-ups that they do. And gone are the days where, you know, good old Alan Shearer, he just used to step forward and smash it, didn't he, really? But then you've got sort of Paul Pogba, just because he's Pogba, wanted to do the little... It's an audio podcast, so it makes no odds. But if anyone remembers the Pogba one, basically, yeah, teeny tiny little steps up towards the ball. But apparently the actual rule is, as long as your momentum's going forward, you know, you can take as many steps as you like. I know at five-a-side level, and I really hate to bring it down to five-a-side level, but they always used to say, listen, you know, put a foot next to the ball, and then your next step forward has to be the striking of the ball, because it's five-a-side, and you know, you can't be doing the little
Pogba. Bruno's still doing that, really, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And
he jumps to land, though, doesn't he?
So. Yeah, true. And but that, I mean, I don't know who started it, but obviously Jorginho
did his little, you know, does it well.
He pioneered it, I guess, the little thing. But I guess goalkeepers are sort of being like...
But this is the thing that's frustrating, though, because they're getting annoyed about the fact that they can't leap forward to then to jump to a side when... You still have to hit the ball at a certain point, and if you can't do the jump forward and go for stuff, then you are essentially, you're rooted to the ground, you're going either way. So what does it matter if someone's taking a slow run-up, a big run-up, a jump run-up, because they're still hitting the ball?
No, they are,
You've still got to jump at the same time they hit the ball. So surely, it'd make more sense for that foot-on-the-line rule.
Just makes it harder for them to judge, doesn't it? Not knowing when it's going to be struck.
Yeah,
but they've still got to make the choice, though. They've still got to make the choice about where they're going to go when the ball's being hit at the end of the day. It could take 20 minutes to get to the ball to hit the ball, but as soon as the ball is to be struck, then you make your choice there.
Because case in point,
you're on the line, you have to make that.
As luck would have it, we've got the replay here up so we can see. So Sam Johnson's just made the save, and we're hopefully going to see the replay of where he is. So he's quite far out there.
He's so far. He's jumped. He's leaped. Couple of yards,
he's leapt. He's leapered. And then Fernandes takes the second one. Of course, we know how that ended up.
He still didn't learn from his mistake.
No. It is hard, though. The scrutiny on goalkeepers now to sort of... But like you say, they should train for that. And yeah, they should. But with the... I think the benefit goes with the sort of the taker of the penalty, because they don't say, for instance,
that's the point of football, to score a goal. So surely you should be giving the benefit of the doubt to the people who are trying to score the goal.
Oh yeah, but what I'm saying,
ball
and more power to them, because you end up with like we're getting more retaken penalties this season than probably ever before, and we're only about seven games in. Yeah, well for us, yeah, but the taker of the penalty can still have so the goalkeeper on the line, for instance, can do the wobbly legs thing, like who pioneered that, was it Grobbelaar, you know, they can sort of faff about with things like that as a deception tactic. But then the striker of the ball, I've never really thought about this in detail until right now, but say, for instance, and this would be a horrible situation for everyone involved, but say, for instance, the referee said, right, look, you know, it's like five-a-side rules, like when I blow the whistle, you've got to step up and hit it. There's no jumping. There's no this. There's no little Pogba steps. Nothing like that. I mean, we could spend all night talking about the different penalty techniques that there's been, where people just sort of trying. But the thing with that Fernandes thing, and I guess goalkeepers don't have this in their locker as a defence mechanism, Joe. I guess goalkeepers wait for the striker to make a move, and then I guess maybe you know, some of them do, some of them probably don't. But Fernandes, for one, is clearly jumping up and landing and getting an inkling of where that keeper
wants to go. Waiting to see which way they've gone, then doing it.
And the keeper's just there going, he's like, he's a rabbit in the headlights, isn't he? And now, I mean, basically my point on this is, how cheesed off would you be if you were Juventus in 2003, I think it was, in the final, funnily enough, at Old Trafford? Because anyone listening who's not familiar with that, went to penalties. And Dida was the hero of the penalty shootout. AC Milan won the final. Dida, every single time, he's like on the 6 yard line. He shimmies so far forward and he's saving these penalties. And of course this is years and years before any of this legislation comes in. But you'd be a bit aggrieved going, well, now you sort it out. Because he's pretty much kissing the players as they're shooting, like, yeah, you want to get it past me? Yeah, didn't it? Yeah, I'd like to see you try.
There'll be plenty of instances of that, won't there?
Yeah.
Right, let's move on from West Brom and penalties. Anyway, we've got a little bit of time to look ahead to Sunday. We've got Southampton away. Things haven't been great for us down there, and in recent years, anyway. They're doing pretty well this year. 17 points. Obviously, we've played a game less, so we're a little bit behind. If we won our game in hand, you could argue that we'd be pretty even with them. They're up in fifth. Last year we drew 1-1. We shouldn't have drawn 1-1. It was a pretty late header from Vestergaard when he had longer instead of shorter. How are you feeling about Sunday? Southampton away. How are you feeling?
I'd be lying if I was saying I was confident. I really don't know. It just depends on what kind of attitude we take into this game and what we want to achieve from it, because the whole thing this season is inconsistency. So we can have an amazing night like we have done tonight, but then we could go to Southampton and probably get turned over. You just don't know what kind of United are going to turn up on the day. Obviously they are doing very, very well this season, and the last night's game will show how well they were getting a good draw against a very good Wolves team.
They went ahead as well, didn't they? Were they winning?
I didn't watch it, I think they took the lead, didn't they?
Yeah, I'm not certain about
it. But yeah, and you need to be worried, especially like some of the players they have, and obviously there's no Ings, which is good for us, because we need to keep him away from the goal, because when he's in front of goal, he's going to get one. But then you should be worried about the likes of Theo Walcott these days, because he seems like a player reborn, and you know he can get a goal if he wants to. And his partnership with Shea Adams is really good at the moment. And
it's working, which is surprising for a man wearing white tights. He was wearing white tights last night, and I had to take a double take. I'm like, Theo, he's got the hair and the white tights. He's rocking a look.
He's got white in his beard, which frightened me to death.
He's only 31.
Yeah, same age as me.
Which is
only for a few weeks, though.
Oh yeah, but I remember him when he was 17, of course, being sort of announced in that England team. Shows our age, or my age at least. And to see him with grey flecks in his beard, that was kind of a bit of, oh, there he is, he's appeared on screen there.
Speaking of him, he's
we'll
on screen.
To clarify who went ahead first, I guess. But yeah, you're right. Southampton, Theo Walcott looking quite good at the moment.
Yeah, they're doing well. You'd think that we could at least go there and pick up a point.
Well, we like drawing against them, so
we do like drawing against them.
You'd think they would be able to get a draw at least.
I think we had the results up, actually. Let's just go back to it. So yeah, we drew at home to them at the end of last season, which looked like it was going to mess up the whole Champions League plan, especially with that was a sucker punch of a late one to succeed.
Concede.
Definitely didn't succeed. Concede. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we had the 1-1 draw at their place early in its season. Quite dramatic, actually. We We had the 3-2 win at Old Trafford where Pereira scored and Lukaku got a couple of beautiful goals. Always close games, so I would expect similar again. Also, the away game in Mourinho's last weeks was a 2-2-1.
Oh, God.
We went 2-0 down and your mate Ander Herrera got us back in it, I think. Or did he get the equaliser?
He got
a goal.
But my abiding memory of that game is Scott McTominay lying behind the wall.
Yes.
There you go, Scott. There, great. Rubbish.
Yeah. My abiding memory is Pogba giving it away every 5 seconds.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is not a Pogba hate show. That's not what we do around here. But he was awful in that game, and he's not been great recently, and he's not been in the squad for the last two games. Will he be involved this week? Apparently, he had an ankle knock.
He trained yesterday, didn't he?
He trained yesterday, but Solskjaer was pretty open about the fact he was struggling. And a lot of the... Because they had an open training session before the Istanbul game. And a lot of the reports were that he was moving gingerly every now and again, which doesn't sound good. And considering that he was out for last season with an ankle injury, with his like loose bits of bone in his ankle or whatever it was... Doesn't sound too good, but at least his training is not completely out. But would he play anyway? I don't know. Like, have you got any idea who you would play on a Saturday? Let's have some predictions for the lineup for what will probably be a tough game. I assume it will be De Gea in net.
Yeah. I'd like to see maybe the same team that started tonight. I can't really find any real different setups apart from maybe taking Cavani out and putting Greenwood in, starting Greenwood. But
yeah, just shuffling them around.
Just shuffle the front three around. But apart from that, like if you're not gonna play Pogba, then take Van der Beek and just hope that between him and Fred they can kind of rotate who's gonna sit and who's gonna protect that back line. So, yeah, I genuinely would take our starting lineup that started tonight because it started really well, and I like the fact that we've got Van der Beek and Bruno on the same field because, again, it stops people going on about why Van der Beek's not being played. And there's a good argument to say that it really worked today, and I think it did. And if we do the same thing we did tonight and get a couple of early goals, put the game to bed a bit earlier, then maybe rest them for the PSG game if we need to and do the same things what we did tonight. I mean, there's nothing wrong with all his tactics there. Get a couple of early goals, get a good lead, rest the players that we're going to need to make an impact this weekend.
I think a few of them subs were telling in the fact that it was... I think he feels Lindelof is important, and if he stands a chance of having him...
Yeah, you need to bring him off early.
On Sunday. Yeah, I think he might come back in if he is fit. There's probably a doubt over Wan-Bissaka. I don't know, James, would you make any changes? Would you play Pogba if he's fit? Would you bring Scott McTominay back in?
Well, I was just thinking, yeah, I mean, I sort of agree with Matt, really. I think the lineup has a very good chance of being similar, very, very similar. But as you just alluded to, yeah, the sort of Wan-Bissaka substitution was a bit ponderous, really.
Yeah, he went straight down the tunnel, really, didn't he, rather than one sitting on the bench.
Exactly, so that leads, I think, there could be an issue. Other than that, you'd expect him to start. But then, as we mentioned before, this could kind of be like a Brandon Williams right-back sort of berth, so you don't know. But other than that, yeah, Lindelof, as we said, he came off, and you're thinking maybe that...
He's had back trouble for weeks now. I think even going into end of last season, I think he had back trouble. So.
Yeah, but, you know, if he can play, probably will. And then left-back, well, I don't know, maybe Telles again, because obviously Shaw's still out, we're thinking, aren't we?
Well, so, you'd think if Williams is going to come in, it'll probably be up for Wan-Bissaka rather than Telles.
Yeah, and then the midfield's... I don't just on the kind of the way things have been sort of going. I mean, I don't want to get political about this, but I just personally, I just don't think Van der Beek's going to get that start. I think Fred would, I'd put my life on Fred starting. And yeah, Pogba might come back into the team. Again, I don't really feel confident about that. I just don't think he's gonna feature. Just which leaves you maybe Matic, because he made a bit of a cameo tonight. Maybe that's a bit of a precursor to the weekend. Yeah, he'd like getting him a few minutes in the legs there. So you could have a kind of a pivot of Matic and Fred. We'll see how that goes. And no, then
we know how it went. It went not great against
West Brom. No, but hey, listen, you know, tomorrow's another day, isn't it? And then Sunday is a few days later than that. So that's a few days to sort of the new day.
That's how the days work.
Of course. Well,
that is how days work.
Yeah. And then no, but that attacking sort of that attacking trident, if you like, could, I mean, again, I don't know. I'm not trying to predict. Well, we're predicting by nature, aren't we?
You are trying to predict.
Well, I'm trying to predict, but I'm not trying to look at it as if I understand Solskjaer's sort of way of thinking. Sometimes you get the feeling maybe there is some sort of foreshadowing going on here. So he's given Greenwood a few minutes and he's given Matic a few minutes, maybe with the mindset of, well, at the weekend, you're probably going to start, lads, like, because it's unusual, actually, the fact that we've played on a Tuesday night, haven't we? And then it's the Sunday.
Got a long time.
A few days of rest there. So,
a good gap for once.
Yeah. So in theory,
Liverpool have been given the shittest draw this week, haven't they? Because they're the early game on Saturday, and they're playing tomorrow.
That is a shame.
But are they playing at 8 as well? Though I think they're playing late.
Oh well, yeah.
I mean, not that 2 hours aren't going to really change the world.
They're at home, though, aren't they? I think.
So. Yeah, but so no, we're in an unusual position where feasibly the same team could.
It could go again.
It wouldn't raise a lot of eyebrows, but I just get the feeling that they're gonna chop and change. Yeah. And Greenwood, you know, should get that start. And you know, on the basis of how sharp he looked tonight, he looked really, you know, if the gauntlet gets thrown down to him, he's gonna take it. I think he'll get, you know, potentially get a couple of goals at the weekend if he's really firing it. If the team are gelled and all that, but our I've not said a whole 11. There, but you can kind of assume where I'm going with it. I think Fernandez in the number 10 spot there. I think Martial, Greenwood, and I think Rashi. Would complete a potential 11. But the thing, when it comes to me being positive or not, I always try to be. I always try to be an optimist in these situations. But the thing with Manchester United, I don't want to go on about too much about, like, you know, following Sir Alex Ferguson, but our main enemy seems to be ourselves sometimes. Just get our stuff right. Just get the basics right. Just play. And again, like what Matt was saying about Maguire, just some of them leadership bits there. And we can hear more now. If we don't have the crowd noise on, you can hear the players trying to communicate with each other. And sometimes Maguire maybe. Now, I don't think anyone in this room was captain Man United before. I haven't, personally. It must be quite tough to do.
I was in line to that one time, but then I rolled my ankles a couple of.
Well, there you go. But is it about shouting? Is it about leading by example? All that, you can talk about that till the cows come on. But the thing is, if we just get everything, you know, set up and we play the way that we know we can, and Fernandez today, we saw he unlocks a lot of doors, and when people are sort of in tandem with him, it makes for a good game.
Yeah, just can't fall apart when Fernandez goes off, which sometimes seems like the case.
Yeah.
For my 11, as it is my job on the Devil's Trident to actually pick the predicted 11.
I thought you just did a generator. Just press
space bar and it does it. Yeah, I think Solskjaer does tend to do a bit of foreshadowing. I think the Lindelof thing will probably mean that, as long as it's not too serious, I think he'll come off to be protected. So I think he'll come back in with Maguire. Again, Wan-Bissaka, I think he'll protect him to play him. So Tellez will probably remain. I think we'll see McTominay alongside Fred. I think there's a reason McTominay was not involved tonight. Like, he was not in the starting lineup against West Brom and only came on as a sub because he'd been travelling a lot with Scotland and maybe been on the lash. I don't think he'd been on the lash, but he could have been on the lash.
Yeah. If I was a Scottish player, I'd have been on the lash.
It looked like they could have had a good party.
They were having a couple of beers in that. You know, to a couple of the social media videos. I've seen a few of the videos. There were definitely a couple of beers knocking around.
Yeah, I don't think it's a hangover, but I think there's a chance he comes back in fully rested anyway, especially against Southampton, who are energetic. So I think he'll need both of McTominay and Fred away against a side that presses and goes for it. And then, we can't see past Bruno. which would mean that Van der Beek doesn't start again, which it also means that Pogba doesn't start. But is that controversial right now? I don't think it is. But I do think Greenwood will. I can't see Cavani doing 90 minutes and then starting again. So I think it'll be the front four that sorted us out at the end of last season.
Yeah.
Greenwood's got his few minutes. He looks great. And I think, the next step is probably him starting. But we'll see. We'll see come Sunday at 2 o'clock, I think we're playing.
Yeah, 2 o'clock.
So, until then, I think there'll be a preview piece out on the website for the Southampton game, because we're going to get back on that. And yes, we'll see if United can carry on a bit of momentum. We've got 3 wins in a row now. Can we pick up some points against a team that are above us and we could do to catch? It'll be a useful 3 points. So I don't know when we'll meet up again. We will meet up soon, maybe after the PSG game, potentially, and we'll get the second episode then. But until then, we have been James, Matt and Simon at the Devil's Trident podcast, and we will see you next time.
See you later.
See you later, thank you.